I had a request to talk about that strange subject matter, yoga. Everybody does yoga these days, don't they? But I've been asked to talk about the common sense of it, as opposed to the power developing magical attributes. So I'm going to talk about six plane yoga. P-L-A-N-E. Can I do it without a diagram, you think? Can you imagine six planes like this? Well, don't. Imagine six planes like this. When we do a plane diagram like this, it gives us an erroneous idea of the relation between the brains. So can you visualize circle within circle? And then I won't have to switch this thing on. Or would you rather have it on? I'll do the suffering. Actually, it's a very good exercise to imagine six concentric spheres together, rather than three horizontal lines, top to three horizontal lines. Because those give you an idea of planes, it's one above the other, and one superior to the other. And you all know that yoga is simply the same word, slightly modified, as the English word yoke, and it means to conjoin. It doesn't mean anything else. And the Latin version of the same thing is lig, in religion. Religion properly understood is yoga. Yoga properly understood is religion. And yoking properly understood is yogic religion. So we have to keep this in mind. We're talking about six concentric spheres, and they are all generated from the center outwards. We'll see why that is. When you start to think about anything, the starting is called initiation. In-it-e-o. In-it-e-o. I begin. One I, one N, one I. Can anybody spell it for me? Yeah? Let me see. How many I's? Somebody said three, somebody said four. I'll settle for four. Because if there are only three, there still have to be four. Because that one would have to coordinate the other three. And would not be the other three considered other than in their separativity. And the yoga, the religion, the yoking, means non-separativity. Do you mind if I go rather slowly tonight, because I'm trying to clarify something. In it, e, o. Yes? That's how I begin. How many in it, e, a, t, o? Initiation is not adeptship. Initiation is beginning, setting on the pathway. It isn't any more than that. If you meet initiates, you're meeting beginners. Adepts are beyond beginning. Unless they're very intelligent, in which case they know that it's all beginning, all the time, because there's an infinity of things unknown for anything we know, no matter how much we know. Now we'll use the hand, because the hand is a very mysterious thing. You know, man, manual, the Latin for hand and the word man are related together. Man is to count, to evaluate and control appetite. M-A-M-A-R signifies appetite. N means to negate and therefore to control. So man means a being capable, in principle, of controlling his appetite. Why should we bother to control it? Ask any mouse in a trap. Cheese in the trap, mouse nasty mouse. And young mouse, uneducated in this wicked world, goes to where the smell is and goes in, bites the cheese, and the door closes. Necessity for controlling appetite means only this. If you don't, you can be in a trap. In fact, the whole doctrine of the four in religion is the doctrine of getting in a trap. Observe the word trap. Torah, that's law, P, positive. Trap is simply the law of the operation of forces such that if you don't know it, you are posited within Torah, within the law of existential being. If you are not identified, you could not get into trouble. So we're going to start on the hand. And it's laid out, as you see, with five going out of one. I want you to put the one in the middle circle and then arrange the others outwardly. The palm is the one in the center. The next circle is will. The next is intellect. Next is mentation. Next, affection, that's like dislike. Next, physicality. Now there's a belief amongst a lot of people that yoga somehow will give you a power to transcend the troubles and tribulations of the external material world. And therefore the external material world, the world of physicality of body, is somehow viewed in that theory as not very good, it's just a fallen thing. The physical body has to be transcended somehow. And what we're talking about tonight is that it's a total misunderstanding of the principle. Every level is valid in its own right. Every level has a function peculiar to itself. And none of these levels can be eliminated by transcendence. You know, I've known a lot of people in yoga circles who have thought they were meditating when they were identifying themselves with high priestesses or goddesses or some superior being. Similarly, in India, identifying with a god. Not like Muhammad Ali, I'm the greatest. Now, if you identify with a thing, you draw power from that thing and you begin to operate in the manner of your identification. In ancient Egypt, they practiced a lot of magic by identification with god form. You studied the attributes of a given god, which meant an entity, with certain capacities, six of them. Consciousness, will, intellect, mentation, affection, physical activity. And the result was in the Egyptian courts, there was tremendous rivalry to try to get on top of the situation. And they use all kinds of techniques, including black magic as opposed to white. In white magic, you will to control your appetite in order to do good. In black magic, you do self-control of your appetite to do bad, presumably to some other reason. So now we're going to look very carefully at this six-eared figure. And we're going to say that the six spheres are real. They're all present, and they are differentiated by frequency of vibration. There's actually a measurable difference between your physicality, knocking bone on bone, and flesh on flesh. There's a difference there in your feeling of like-dislike. There's a real frequency difference, which you can show today on an oscilloscope. It's not a theory anymore, it's a fact. So we have to allow it. The vibrational characteristics of the physical world are peculiar to that world and have a function there that is not present in the other five. The vibrational characteristics of affection, liking, disliking, falling in and out of love and so on, they are peculiarly finer in frequency, but they are not morally superior. The vibrations of mentation, the vibrations of intellection and volition, those go up in frequency, not in moral superiority. There's no ethical or moral superiority in climbing out of your physical body into your will. It does not make you into a superior being, simply to transcend another frequency. Again, if you see the program about LSD last week, where the man that was working on it finished up with the statement, I used to believe that there was only one reality, and now I know there are other realities. And we're talking about six levels of reality, and we're going to confine ourselves to six for a very definite reason. Six means six existence. It means a method of stabilizing the content of consciousness. Now, I know a lot of crazy people. A few of them in hospital. The rest are out of them. But they have tried to transcend physicality as such, thinking somehow the physical is at a low level. They've heard about the four, and they've spelt it F-A-L-L instead of P-A-L-L. And yet those two words have the same origin. To fall into identification at any level is to pull, to cover, to obscure one's awareness of one's own being. On the top level, represented by the innermost circle, consciousness itself. That consciousness is not an object, never becomes an object. It is simply that field in which the other levels attain a degree of objectivity. Let's say the word object, we've said it before, ob, is merely another form of the word ob, O-R-B, O-B. When you put the R in ob, all you mean is that the O-B, the ob, the object, is now discriminated, differentiated within itself. And it is thrown, the ject means thrown. An object is thrown in consciousness, by consciousness. Consciousness precipitates its own content with holding. A field of consciousness is in principle infinite, and when it closes on itself like that, the moment it contacts itself, so it has circumscribed and then sphered and encapsulated that zone is an object, a thrown orb, thrown into consciousness. We don't realize that enough, or strongly enough. All the things we like and dislike are objects we have precipitated with our interest. That's a tremendously important thing. Consciousness is the field which we know only immediately. We cannot know that consciousness other than immediately. We don't know it by means of another thing. Consciousness knows itself. But all the objects are known by the consciousness. Can we realize the meaning of this? Consciousness itself is a field of sentient power, and it makes its own object. And it does it through a series of steps. First of all, this one you put on your palm. But your palm you represent by a circle, the innermost one of the six. And that one has the power to squeeze on itself and squirt from its center of squeeze what is called essence. For essence equals issuance. Essence equals issuance of this self-contracting will. Whatever you do, whether you know it or not, you have willed it within the field of consciousness, and it is your will to posit a form. And that form, contemplated mentally, psychologically, is called the content of intellect. Now the tao in intellect, in some Greek word, means purpose. That telos, the aim, the goal. The aim is A-I-M, which is simply I am. Turn round. The aim for all beings, whether virus, bacterium, worm, bird, elephant, whatever it is, the aim is simply to be I am. The aim is to be myself. For every being, there are no exceptions. Whether it's a god or a devil or an angel, a human being or a cabbage, from the central sphere, has gone forth outwardly through will, intellection, mentation, affection, embodiment. In order. They always do it in order. You can go through it very quickly or slowly, but you go through it. If you watch very carefully, you will find you have deep inside what is called a motive. Motive is another word for a motor that drives you, and that motor is set going by the will, by the initiation power. Now, within your field of awareness, you all know, as you sit on your chairs, that there are some other beings not on your chair. And you are identifying with a given body, each one of you, in the place where your chair is, and you sit on it, but you know there are other beings around about you. You may ignore them, you may like them, you may dislike them, but you know there are other beings. So your zone of consciousness is permeated by the zone of consciousness of the other beings. So we all know there are many. Each one single being knows there are many. The field of consciousness, then, within the infinity of other beings' fields, wills to be itself, wills to say, I am. And the process is exactly the same everywhere. And it's the process fabricated primarily by God. And remember, God is not a fellow in the sky. God is infinite sentient field power. Infinite. Extended and intended throughout itself. It is not an existential separate being like a stone or a cabbage or a man. It is an infinite field of sentient power, the content of which is the totality of all that we call the universe or the multiverse. The multiverse is a lot of universes. All wills are spheres of operation by the one supreme sentient power, which we call, for shorthand, God. And we call it God because it's good. And we call it good because the word good means gu, di. But gu means to go, means to will, means to release energy from the center. Ha, ji, put a dot right in the center of your innermost circle. Let that dot be called gimel. Let that gimel represent camel with a hump, which maintains it in the desert of infinity. The will to I amness. When Moses says to God, whom shall I say? You are. Who sent me? God says, say, I am sent you. I am. Now, this is the supreme possibility for all conscious beings to come to a level where they can say, I am, and mean it. And the opinions of other people are of no account. That's not egotistic stupidity. That is plain statement of spiritual monadic fact. Every point within the infinite field is absolutely justified because it is a precipitation of that field, the sentient power. So everybody can say, I am myself. Well, yesterday is 7,000 years. That means seven planes of being. The seventh being the rest plane, the resting plane in which the other six spheres are positive. We even say, I am, and somebody says, no, you're Trevor. What are you?
I am.
You am Trevor. Good. Something I said to you, well, as a matter of fact, I'm a solipsist. Nobody believes anything unless I permit them. You're a modality of my consciousness, a figment of my imagination. Now, can I shake you? Can I make you consider it?
Not really.
Not really. And then you're relatively safe, yeah? And on one occasion, a fellow brought a woman in here, and he introduced her to me, having warned me, she's a solipsist. She believes she's the only being and the rest are figments of her imagination. And she came through the door in the reception room, this is my friend, the solipsist. And I put my hand out and shook hands and said, oh good, so am I. Do you know, she didn't stay. She's never been back again. Now why was that? Well, somebody was wrong. And there's a very old Jewish saying, somebody's got to give, it doesn't have to be you. So if you want to play Solipsist game, I should play it too, it's only a word. So, the dot in the center sphere signifies the initiative that precipitated that sphere. The initiative of the sphere precipitating the sphere of individuated consciousness. If you draw a circle for the palm, that's sentient power. How about outside that circle? Answer, infinite sentient power not precipitated into a finite sphere. Now, when you comprehend this, you are absolutely safe. You can't think of another being. You can only know that you are you, unalterably, in all eternity, you. We then have, within the field of consciousness, the initiation point, which precipitates it by a simple process of expansion. In some schools of yoga, they have a three-part process. Purity, or purification. Expansion, unification. Now, purification is stage one there, and it means get rid of rubbish from your consciousness. Just get rid of it. And then when you get rid of the rubbish, expand to infinity. And then you will be at one with the infinity. So purification, expansion, union. But we don't want to abandon individual reference, because that's our method of self-stabilization, without which we would be chaotic. So we retain the circle represented by the palm as our central reference sphere. Yet still knowing that we precipitated it by an act of initiative right in the center of the palm. If you look in your palm, you'll see a triangle. The base of the fingers, those fat pads, make one side, and there's a pad on your little finger side, and a pad on the thumb side, isn't there? And in the middle there is a triangle. That triangle represents triple F, force, form, function. There's a force on the thumb side, a form on the little finger side, and a function in the middle. Now, what does it feel like if you say, I am a force, form, function being of sentient power, self-precipitate, from eternity to eternity. Nobody can shake me unless I identify with their statement. Have you ever seen a professional hypnotist calling people out of the audience and by verbal suggestion say, your mind is now under my direction? You get some people on stage, at the one time well-known fellow Salita. We've got a lady on stage, a Jewish lady, should have been careful. And he so-called hypnotized her, and she went back home, and then he got a solicitor's letter. And he owed and had to pay £3,000. But she got a headache, which her solicitor attributed to his hypnotic errors. He should have been careful, she was a Jewish lady. When you hypnotize Jewish ladies, first make a close friend of the solicitor and agree to split the proceeds. Boys are not that smart. Now, you can say to a hypnotized person, you're a rabbit. And the audience bursts out laughing. Ha, 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 ha. And when I say the magic word, ah, tissue, you will blow your nose. Ah, tissue. That's circus clown trick, isn't it? What did I really blow? The lips. Good circus clown. Make it longer. It's a trick. But you know, under suggestion, you can make people believe it's not a trick. You can even sell them for $4,000 the secret of how to do it to other people. And you can get people to pay that money. I too would like to be able to make people blow their nose like that. And therefore, I will pay $4,000 and become famous. Now, suggestion is suggestion. The S-U-G should be S-U-B, but it's liaised with the following G. So it's really suggestion. Suggestion. And what it is sub is intellectual critical power. If you retain your intellectual critical power, you can't be hypnotized. But if you allow yourself to believe, which you might do for interest, like the Jewish lady did, or because you might get a funny sensation, I'd like to know what it feels like to be a rabbit. It is your own appetite that leads you into the hands of a con man. Nothing else. It's only the M-A, the Ma, that leads you. Now, why is M-A the symbol of appetite? Well, M is pronounced with the lips closed, and therefore signifies encapsulation and substantialization. Now, when you encapsulate, do you not deprive the sentient power in that sphere of the infinity that it had beforehand? If I draw a sphere in midair and say, let that represent to you a zone of sentient power ensphered, encapsulated, have I not lowered its awareness of what is beyond it? And that means, so is it not deprived and reduced? And therefore, does it not have a faint memory? Once upon a time I was infinite and free, and now I am bound. And I want my infinity back. That's Ma. Appetite. The M activating. M-A. M for substance closure. A for activation. Ma. To understand that fact, it's only where you are deprived have you any appetite whatever. If you knew your infinity fully, you would have no appetite. None at all. You wouldn't need it. Everything is yours. You know when Jesus says, all thou hast given me, Father, God, I have still got it. No man snatches out what God puts into my hand. He means that. If a person sees the truth thoroughly, he won't lose it. Think of a truth that you know. Tell me one. You're very good at responses, Jetta. Tell me one truth that you really know of so well that you do not conceive anybody can rob you of it.
God is infinite.
God is infinite. That's fairly safe because the infinite cannot be dispossessed. Can it? Right. We're going to establish that all levels, the whole six, resting in the seventh, the whole six are under discussion because they're not at rest. They're all working. They won't bother with the seventh, because that means spirit, sentience, even, S, even, seven. When it's all equilibrated perfectly, that's maximum entropy. Nothing happens and there's nothing to say about it. So in the seventh, which is pure rest, it's the pralaya of Hindu philosophy, rest. So we won't bother about that. We won't even bother about the eighth. Because the eighth is what happened in the state of the seventh when you remember that there are other beings that know nothing about it. So you decide to come back into the sixth system to teach them. That's the eighth. I remember Fred saying to me a couple of months ago, you didn't deal with number nine. We only get that to eight, you know, well, okay. We'll introduce number nine next time. This is the next time. Number nine is simply three times three. You have a tongue, which is full of power. You have a heart full of feeling, a head full of thinking. And you could be functioning separately with your intellect, independently of your feeling, independently if you're willing to act. And you could have no coordination whatever between them. You seem to be a being of three departments. Whereas, if we put into the head the memory of feeling and willing, and into the chest the memory of thinking and willing, and into the belly the memory of thinking and feeling, we've now got three in each one, haven't we? And three C's, correct me if I'm wrong, Peter?
Nine.
Doesn't nine mean num one? Huh? Doesn't nine mean not? Yeah, N-E-I-N. And N-I-N-E, isn't it the same word, switch around? Aren't they the same letters? Right? Ein means one. And nine means don't fool yourself. That one was posited by an act of infinite will. There isn't one. There is infinity. Positing one. So you say nine, nine. Nicht das. Not that. And D-A-S, which is a Germanic form of English T-H, sounds as if D-T-H, A-T. Das means divided. Activate your sentence in a disintegrated manner. So we say nicht das. Danke. No likey. I don't want to be cut to pieces by a stimulus that I do not originate. And I don't want to forget when I originated the stimulus that I did it. I am the definer of my destiny. When he impaged, he was in jail. He asked for paper and wrote a book on St. Paul. That was good. It was not a waste of time, was it? I was sent a book recently by Sue Talbot, a biography of hers, recommended by Zohar Ford. And it's a very well-written book. And I tried to get her on the phone several times, which is rather elusive. So would you mind passing the message for me? Uh-huh. very well written book, and it's a sort of confession of a mystic. Paperback book, and it's very good and very well written. And in it are statements about gathering oneself together. Carry that book on, write another one, developing the concept more and more, and it will finish up with I am at the end of it. The one that started writing the book, I'm Alpha, the beginning, I'm Omega, the big O. Alpha means God, phenomena. Al is God, and the PHA is from a word meaning to appear. That's in the word phenomenon. Alpha, the God that appears. He is an epiphany. And he presents the universe within himself by his own will to manifest. Like he says in the Quran, I was a hidden mystery, says God. I desire to show my mysteries. Therefore, I created the world. And we are within that world and parts of that world. And because divinely pulsated, we are co-eternal with the God, Allah, that pulsates us. And Allah means all there is. Allah means all life, infinite life. Translated A-double-L, like English all. And the aspirate to the end means life, all life, Allah. When you say Allah, you mean all life, infinity of life, and that's called God. A hidden mystery. Until it objectifies, throws these spheres within itself. Now we have been brought up in a culture in Europe, largely Christianized, and we have been taught about sin and death and hellfire, punishment, all kinds of things, in an attempt to control us and make us behave properly. Now we can justify this by carefully examining a simple fact of historic and prehistoric evidences. Once upon a time, there weren't any civilizations. And what we call human beings roamed about in those days nomadically. They hadn't made cities, and they went about eating roots and fruits, and they had no system whatever of government. They went about like quadrupeds. In the Old Testament it says, yea, their breath goes down to the ground, even as the beast. Now, eating on the ground is eating in the same place where you've excreted rubbish. So it would be an improvement if you just stand up on your back legs and start grasping fruit. And you raise your eyes from the earth level and contemplate the sky. Now, suppose we had remained in the quadruped position with our eyes fixed on the ground from which we eat our food. Could we have become astronomers, geometers, mathematicians, and put men in space? No? No way. Therefore, the priests of certain orders, like the Order of Melchizedek, said we've got to shake man out of his quadruped mentality. We've got to raise his eyes above the horizon. We've got to make him look at the heavens. We've got to make him see the rotation of the year. We've got to teach him the Rota, the Torah of reality, to make him no longer identified with beastliness. So they began to teach that. In the process, they had to condemn not only the quadruped position physically, but also any physical activity whatever that tied the consciousness to the ground, to the earth, to matter. Now, were they justified or not? To get that man off his 4 feet, onto 2, to expand, remember we said purification, get rid of the rubbish, expansion. Look to the horizon and above it. You see the stars. You make a map. You measure the year. You invent mathematics. And you then apply it back on the earth in geometry. Geometry is earth measurement. From a principle learned by looking at the sky. So, when civilization began to develop the priest powers, which means rationalists, said the true reason of man can develop only by condemning non-reason, only by condemning impulsive, unthought-out behavior. In order to do that, we will have to fabricate ideas that terrify people. That lovely Sebastian word of the Greeks. One must terrify the people, said the ancient priest, because otherwise they will remain quadrupeds. So there's a complete justification for frightening people and breaking their identification with the gross material earth and the physical body dependent on it for external stimuli. What we want to do is lift them out of the gross identification to the next level. But put the gross level on your little finger. But if you hadn't got a gross body of reference, could you be taught? No, it wouldn't be possible. Your gross body of reference is a marvelous thing. It's the lowest highest you've got. And the highest lowest, it's the most stable of all your contents. It's a very slow vibration thing. Your emotions are very quick, aren't they? And your mentations, the rate of your thought, you can't keep up with it very well without tremendous practice. If you try it, it's difficult. Ideas come in the mind and go and reappear and disappear. That's a brilliant idea, I must remember it. When it's so good, I will remember it. So I won't bother to write it down. It's in the middle of the night. I have a dream. Brilliant idea, lovely. Can't forget it, it's marvellous. I don't need to write it down. I remember it. I wake in the morning. What was that? Wonderful insight. I invented something that would give me £1,000,000 in 3 months. What was it? So he nods his wife. Did I tell you about my dream? She says, no, dear. Why didn't you tell her? She might have pinched the idea. It can happen, you know. I've known that happen with a trusted wife, pinch a good idea to an innocent man. So the physical body, its very grossness, is its highest value. It's a mass of inertia. It changes so very slowly since you were conceived. Since the sperm hit an ovum long ago and went through those changes until today, more or less, you can say, I'm more or less the same fellow I was. Well, I still feel like the same fellow I was half an hour ago. And I can remember things I did in, as David would say, he would say, I bet it's 1928. Probably. The memories are there, you see, and they're stabilized by what? The affection. The next finger. Ring finger, also called nameless finger, useless finger. Because it can't do anything, it's a very feeble thing. Schumann was so disgusted with it, he tied it back to give it elevation that it hadn't got. Your physical body, remember, is the last product of a conscious will to formulate, temporalize, and effectualize a reference point. So anything we can do at the top level, magical willing, suggestion, control of other people, that means nothing if we can't do it on our own physical body. No good sitting with legs crossed feeling like a yogi or a goddess or a high priestess or a divine being. Effectually, you cannot control your own body. And you control that body by remembering you precipitated it into that pattern which it has quite purposefully. It was a volitional publishing of a purpose long ago. How do we feel about it? Guilt, bully, despised, condemned. How does it say it in the New Testament? Guilt, bully is called a stone. The stone that was rejected by the builders has become the cornerstone of the new temple. And temple means time fold, time play. If you hadn't got a gross bullet to receive stimuli and record them, you would not be able to remember any content of consciousness. So your gross bullet is your best friend and biggest enemy. Why is it the biggest enemy? Because you might identify with the gross bullet, like certain materialist can, and think there isn't any other kind of bullet. It's just a gross body, and that gross body is the only body. That gross body is a despicable thing, really. It's mechanics. Maybe it's chemistry, but mostly mechanical, electromechanical, electrochemical mechanical. But very low level compared with my brilliant intellect. Now that gross material body is a precipitate of all other levels, and hidden inside it are the other levels. In that body precipitate is feeling, the affect, mentation, time records, intellection, cosmic logic, volition, your initiative, in the field of consciousness is precipitated all of them. And all of those levels are thrown down object, thrown into objective precipitation by a primary act of will of the conscious field. So we are not to despise in any way physicality. You know the expression, cleanliness is next to godliness, and it better come first. That was a very good insight. Because in the unfallen natural animal, cleanliness is number one activity, is it not? Don't all the so-called wild animals spend a large part of their day in physical cleanliness? Because if you don't, you're covered with toxins, which are the byproducts of your activity, and which are lovely nests for viruses, bacteria, mites, a variety of biting creatures, which make life very uncomfortable and divert you from your next evolutionary step. But you have not to forget that your gross physical body is an incarnation of God, of the sentient power field. When we talk about the incarnation of God, we're talking about a necessity. The body is not despicable. The body is to be highly prized because it is our best and most stable reference center. When we understand that and use that in ourselves and in our relation with other people, then we begin to realize the gross physical body is the temple of the living God. A young boy, a very young boy, asked me just recently what to do about getting a girl because he hadn't got one. I said, well, rule one before you bother to get one is the law of kosher, the law of purity, ritual purity. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, you wash first for her sake and second for your sake. It took an hour to explain what that meant. Consideration for the other person requires perfect kosher height, perfect purity of you. And then afterwards, you purify you, because you're not sure whether the partner was aware of the kosher rule. Now that could save him an awful lot of trouble, isn't it? So, gross physical body, the rejected stone, gross materiality. Why was it called the rejected stone? Because consciousness vibrates in a manner that produces the other five, and the vibrational pattern of the whole thing we call the hexonic field, the six field, hex for six. And The patterns of all things are in the vibrations of that field. All we do is intensify. Intensify means in whole making, affirming. We affirm making by holding tightly to what we will to be and to become. Now, the angels, unfallen, mean consciousnesses in the field of consciousness. Remember we said sphere for each one, but all of them are in the infinite. Each one at the top level called the monad, the one, and the Lord, the A.D., Adonai, Lord. One that is Lord of itself. Now before it gets down into the gross material body, it is called an angel. That means when you look at it from below, coming down, it's a messenger, which is what the word angel means, from above. Every time you feel something's a brilliant idea and you'd like to do it, you've got an idea in your mind that's come down into your body and recommending that it be done, haven't you? That idea is an angel. Now imagine in what we call the noumenal world, that is the world from which phenomena derive by splitting, but in the noumenal world they are all co-present and they're perfect in every way. They haven't fallen, they're perfect. And in their perfection they evolve into themselves. So it says about the angels keep their ancient places. As Francis Thompson said, they remain in that condition. And one angel is named Triangle, another is named Square, another is named Rhomboid, and so on. Now, each name in a geometrical configuration in the ancient language is called an angel, a messenger of a possibility of action. And they remain perfect at the noumenal level. And they don't want to become gross. Why not? Because in the gross world you have the possibility of contingency. Yes, contingency means we're touching. I can take this thing called fist and hit this thing called head. If I do it often enough I'll get clots in the brain. I can damage myself by contingency. So the gross world is dangerous. Yeah, it's the highest thing there is as a stable reference, existential, but it's very dangerous because you can hit it. At the moment I'm talking, and maybe you're listening, and when the sound of the voice hits you in the ear, if you pay attention, that means you hold at it, you'll have a modification of your consciousness on the inside. And that will produce a different configuration, a different pattern of possible action. Yes, through the contingency. But supposing I told rubbish, and it were now considered to be brilliant in the slide of Joe's regard and gimbling the way, or maybe you're the bottom room in the moon, that's a grave. Comment, please, Betty. Any use? Well, it would be if you analyse it phonetically. Like mimsy, miserable and flimsy. It's possible to talk what to some people is nonsense, which is not nonsense. For instance, the whole of the Torah, the Old Testament so-called, was originally a block of letters with no divisions whatever. No chapters, no books, no verses, no sentences, no words, letters. Nothing else. The very wise man came along and said, brilliant, brilliant. The people must never be told about this. But if they see me looking at it, they say, it must be interesting. That sage has looked at it. I think I'll have a look. Well, they'll want to know the meaning, won't they? Okay, we'll give them a meaning. We'll take a group of letters and don't define the individual letters. And say, that's the meaning. Instead of V and R separately, you get by R. Instead of in the beginning, you get Bereshit. and you explain it. And they don't see the meaning because you blocked it by your explanation. That's called the open secret. All you have to do to block people's understanding is give them a low-level group definition and don't analyze it. Good technique? But remember, it's necessary because of inertia. Remember, the quadruped mentality, it's called the beast in the Bible, does not like anything except pleasure and pain. Avoidance of pain, grabbing of pleasure. Nice to know them. And it's very allergic to those, and it will always steal the pleasure-giving one and destroy the pain-giving one if it can. But the pleasure-giving one puts you to sleep, and the pain-giving one educates you. So it's permissible to wrap it up. And if people can think a bit more carefully about the definition, they will become illuminated from within. But illuminated is not enlightened, because lumo means a smoky light, a light obscured. Whereas lux, L-U-X, is a light without smoke. So you can be illustrated or illuminated. But illuminated is not as bright as illustrated. Each word has a meaning, each letter has a meaning, and the way that the true priests have taught people to control themselves is by conferring upon a group of letters a meaning, which they call a word. And the word means power to produce order by dividing. Yes? Divide and conquer. The word means power, distribution, order, by division, a categorization of terms. And when people have got the definition, they think they've got something. The one thing they've not got there in the definition is free will, and the knowledge that free will is absolutely its own lord, its own master, its own creative power, and its own utter indestructibility, which is, in another word, immortality. If somebody comes along and smashes your body to pieces without warning, it's not very important. If you center in your self-will, it doesn't mean anything. You can leave while he's beating you, leave that body being beaten, and go into the body of the beater and give the beaten body an extra hit for fun. And then take over the body of the beater. Shankara used to do that as a kind of demonstration trick, whereby he was known as a very great magician. It's horrible for that, isn't it? Anyhow, we want to establish that the physical body is the stone rejected by the builders, whereas the builders are the numinal forces which are called angels, and they do not like gross material bodies because of the danger of contingency, where contingency injures, damages, alters your essential identity. If I go like that, I can actually bruise myself and change the colour locally and put a bit of pain in the knuckle. I can do that. That contingency on myself. And angels don't like it. Those unfallen, numinal beings called angels do not like gross material contingency. So there's a nice Jewish saying that says, one day does not mean 24 hours. It means any division of fern whatever for analytical processes. One day, all the angels were looking over the ramparts of heaven, looking down. What they were looking down at was the gross potential, and they did not like it. And they disliked it so much, they kept going back to the edge, to the ramparts of heaven. No. And then God, that is the field, got fed up with them doing it. He suddenly gave them all a kick in the pants, and they went over the top. One third from the heavenly host were kicked over. And we are, believe it or not, half bred from them. We are half bred from God, and the other half is fallen angel. Maybe like that, Mr. Hardman. We have the dynamic of divinity and the dynamic of bestiality. And that doesn't mean worstiality. Have we sufficiently established that the gross material body is not to be despised, that the angels who didn't like it were wrong, and the result is we've got to do what they were scared to do? We're doing an angelic job for them, the scared pussies. And the more we know that, the more we investigate the possibilities of contingency. Yeah? When we study contingency, we are studying what today is called modern empirical experimental science. In the Old Testament, that's called Cain. And raising Cain is the work of human beings on earth, in its one half, the human, and the divine half is remembering to worship the God that forgave Cain when he murdered Abel. And Abel believed in God, so he didn't do anything about it. All's well, God is in charge, okay. I'll just have a little doze by the sheep. There weren't any wolves in those days around. Not yet. So, Cain murdered Abel. Now, why did God allow Cain to murder Abel, considering that God has prevision? Well, he didn't think it was a bad idea. So when Cain had done the dirty job in a fit of rage, God put a mark on him like that. Then no man kill him, because now the evolution of the human race is going to be through Cain, through the empirical, experimental, scientific investigation of contingency. You know, contingency means you hit one thing with another. You get an atom and you fire some subatomic particle at the nucleus of the atom and break it off, and you've got Hiroshima, Nagasaki. Now, you'd never have known that if you didn't do this. So we are deeply indebted to the Cainish experimental science for all the things that we civilized beings consider are worthy of having compared with that original quadruped behavior. Now, you know that animals were made before man in the evolutionary scale, but the consciousness of man is eternal. And the fall is this, that man's consciousness, looking down, saw the animals in their contingency, male and female, and thought that was a good idea. They subjected themselves to the contingent sexual relation and became dependent externally on each other. And that was the fall. Now, I think we've established that the gross material body is the cornerstone of the temple. And so you build the time-fold play temple by stimuli on the physical body, contingent, and you build an image through pleasure pain records, through the affect in the mentation, and you gradually construct from your mentational images a concept of a rule of cosmos. And that gives you an eternal truth. Now the truth shall make you free. And when you examine the origin of the concept, the intellectual proposition, you find it's posited by an act of will. And that will arose as a point in the middle of the central sphere of consciousness itself. Now, every level has its value. We can learn things grossly by continued stimuli, by external empirical sounds, but we can also learn things by refining feelings. You know, they had those dogs out on the moor smelling from bearded babies recently. There aren't many men that can go over the moor and say, a murdered baby there and a murdered 90-year-old man there. But a dog can. That means we can actually, through pleasures and pains, sense things in a very, very fine way. And women generally know more about this than men, because men are more contingent, they're more empirical, they're more scientific. But women, because of the absence of men, men being away at the war, the hunt and the games, women have taught themselves to feel out, what is he doing now? Is she alive or dead? Has he fallen down the well or been carried away by a woman from another tribe? And by this feeling extension, again, purification of intent, expansion of feeling, you come to union. So you can actually find by feeling. We had a cat on one occasion when I was kidding. This cat was taken from Lancaster to Edinburgh, and 3 weeks later he was back in Lancaster. And it was taken by train. How did it find its way back? Well, it just felt like going back. It was more fond of the house than it was the people in the house. Now you know very well that animals can do that, don't you? And you know that animals have been demonstrated to be aware when earthquakes are about to come. And in South America, a couple of days before an earthquake, the animals began to run away. And on the day just beforehand, the birds flew away. And the human beings say, what the devil's up to this silly thing? Now you can extend that feeling. I got to travel quite a lot in my youth for demonstrating this to people, made them very annoyed and very suspicious. So they'd say, can you find so-and-so? When he showed that it could be found by a psychic process, next thing, what does he find out about me? You see? You cannot do a thing like that and publicize it without being in danger. But you can extend that feeling to infinity. Not so far away, you could extend it to investigating other planets and what they're like in their own place by simply extending yourself and then condensing where that planet is instead of where your physical body is on the gross earth. And you get information that way, you can't get any other way. But it's very, very dangerous. You know why it's dangerous, mostly? This universe of ours that we know about is made of the debris of prior universes. These universes without end. They appear, they objectify, then they are dissolved, and they spread out. But there is always a gross material central point, and around it a biomagnetic field of like and dislike, and a temporal record of the prior universe, and an intellectual structure based on it, and the volitions of that prior universe are still with us, if we tune into them. So when we start refining our feelings, we can find ourselves in great trouble if we don't know that we're actually tuning in to things that are real forces in this world and were in another world, and like all forces of consciousness through will, intellect, mentation, affection, gross compaction, they're trying to get in now onto our body. We can actually feel, as they say, taken over. Now I'm quite sure that silly debate they had the other night on TV about can there be really evil people? The answer is no. But there can be people possessed by forces trying to damage something out of revenge. And if you are very fine in your feeling life, you can begin to become aware of them. And then, if you fall into identification, because you tend to believe that if there is a content in your consciousness, it is you thinking that, feeling that, instead of saying that's an alien force, be gone. I know a woman, spiritually, and she says she has a little girl who's an ego control. Little negus, about that means. And this little negus uses four-letter words. In the spirit world. And she tells her often, you don't talk like that in this society. This little spirit control negus. Well, I don't think I'll do. And this spirit medium, you see, has to apologize this little horror, because it makes the medium lady say it. And she wouldn't do that, would she? Not much. Now, a lot of people who play about, and I mean play about, who don't take it seriously now, actually deliberately start to extend their feeling, find what things are in other people's minds. And don't know that if they tune in, they might be tuning into something a bit stronger than their own ordinary reference center, in which they will become an instrument for that other person. So there's a real danger there. Now the collectivity of the totality of all human affection, of like and dislike, of all past worlds, in its totality is called the astral plane. A plane of star power, which is desire determined. You can actually pick up feelings. You can become very intense and compulsive. And you think, I must do this. It's not you. It's a stronger power than your present reference center working through your body, because you, with your curiosity, tuned in. Remember, curiosity is from the curious, Lord. Curiosity is the state of mind trying to get lordship, rulership, dominion. Curiosity killed the cat. Now the cat, like the keter in the Kabbalah, is your essential, true, eternal identity. Cats are individuated. Your spiritual self is very individuated, and it is called cat, KT. And curiosity, the will to become more powerful, to make you forget your own identity. And then you become a prey to feelings called astral beings, which are merely desires that don't originate in you, but in the totality, not in you merely, but in the totality of human experience of all prior universes. But isn't that another dangerous place to be in? And your gross physical body can save you from that. Like when you're in the middle of a horrible nightmare and you wake up, blood to wake on you, touch the body, and tell me, reference. You've been rescued from an astral invasion. Right, now the next one, time. The records of time and the interrelating processes of them are called mentation. Because you count them, and define them, and fixate them, and activate yourself upon that basis. That's your time record. But your time records are not merely yours as an individual since your conception. They include your father, your mother, your father's father, mother, in an expanding pyramid, backwards in history, until they go right back into the field. So you can start with the time record and say, I wonder what I was doing at 2 o'clock on Tuesday 1922. Now, before I said 1922, I hadn't got an image. I was fishing. When I said 1922, I immediately saw a lemonade kiosk on a Sunday. And I was there because on the Tuesday we plotted to go on the Sunday to get the free lemonade. Naughty boys, like scrumping, you know. Now, I hadn't got that in my mind until I made that date. And that means all emotionally charged things are recorded in my time record book as either pleasant or dangerous, harmful, and because of the emotional charge, it's easy to contact me. Can you remember the name of your first boyfriend? The name of your first girlfriend? How long ago is it? I bet you if you're really deeply involved emotionally, you don't forget it. I remember you nicely effing Della at 7. I wonder where she is now. Well, she's my age. That'll help you. Rosie was the emotional charge of that day. I went looking for her in the supermarket. And she's dragging along a little two-wheeled thing in the grocery. And she's bent like a right angle. You can imagine the love returning, can't you? And supposing she was similarly misguided about me. The one time innocent little boy. Utterly harmless. And totally ignorant of what to do with a girl of 7. She's bound to be upset, isn't she? Now, the time records are emotionally charged. And where they are strongly charged, they very easily come back. And most of the bad relations of people come from bad time records. Remember your injuries, the insults received, and you replay them. I'm not talking to that so-and-so. And that so-and-so might have reformed. Possible. You're missing a golden opportunity. So the time records are very, very, very dangerous too. Because a stray word on a picture in a book can start replay and you can get a mood. You can then think because the mood is there that it's your mood instead of a mood of a record long ago. And then the concept, the intellectual proposition. Rules like a piece of string is twice as long as half of it. Rules like that. You know, those can actually condition thought processes and make you behave in a certain way which if you had any compassion, you wouldn't do. Like the idea of justice. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. A man was interviewed the other night about the murder of his little girl and about the possible coming out of jail of the murderess. And he said, if he comes out and I can get near her, I'm going to kill her. Straight into camera. And he would not allow that that woman could reform. Now it's very funny because there was a minister there who had been, how they do, I don't know, but anything is possible. He'd been the governor of a jail for a long time. And then he became a minister of the gospel. And now he was forgiving everything on his Christian concept. More method to forgive than to condemn. And he's prepared to believe that this murderous woman was penitent now. That a woman jailer who knew this murderous woman very well over many years said, she's coming you. She's trying to get out, she wants parole, she's behaving nicely. She hasn't reformed. And she would not let go of that. But she's penitent. Never mind penitence, said a journalist of the Sunday Telegraph. The law doesn't allow penitence to let people escape the consequences of the law. And it's this lovely debate by a number of people, the conclusion, nil. Because each one was identified with its own process. And there was lots of this kind of thing. When anybody else spoke, and when I spoke, the only time I had knowledge was when somebody else said something that was already said. Obviously an intelligent person. And the conclusion? Nothing. Right, the concept of justice. In the Kabbalah you have rigor, rigorous justice on one side and mercy, compassion on the other side. The balance. How do you know which to operate? The answer is go on the middle line and decide which is most useful now. You have to be very alert to do that. Concept of justice, balance. You know that is actually rubbish in the actual world. Doesn't justice mean perfect balance? If forces are perfectly balanced, can they move? No. Is the world we live in an actual world? Yes. Is actuality not movement?
Yes.
And therefore unjust?
Yes.
Never try to be just. Just practice mercy. It's simpler, more economic, and even more profitable. You might be able to sell a pair of shoes that you bought from Oxfam to a person that you hated last year. You might suddenly realize, I've got these damn shoes which I bought in a moment of humanitarianism, and I don't want them. They might have AIDS in them anyway. So you see your own enemy. Sell them. And I'll tell you, at a profit. You get 1 and 6 pence, he pays 3 and 6 pence. That's called forgiveness. Right, next, will. A will is very dangerous. The suffering said to me, how will I know what to will if I'm free? And the answer is, don't ask silly questions. How will you know what to will if you're absolutely free? There's no how about it. Will is initiative. In the moment that you are sensitive to the creativity of the will, you can will and see what happens already. You do a pre-act. Now this is called Lila. L-I-L-A. Lila, L-I means joined to the idea. L-A means joined to the act. Joined to the idea, joined to the act, la, lila, a game. Better? I'm going to play lila with you now. Stand up. Come over here. Change your mind, stop. Go back, sit down. Now, did you deliberately join in the game? Or did you partially react? Did you say this is Lila?
I didn't
really think. Yeah, but why? Why?
I'm conditioned to do
it. You have been a manageress successor for many years.
Yes,
by obeying rules. And tell me to do something.
Tell you to do something.
Yeah, do you expect others to obey you? Remember, you expect to be obeyed, do you?
Well, yes, I have
to. Well, tell me to do something and expect to be obeyed.
Expect
to be obeyed. Tell us all to be obeyed. Would you mind? Please describe how she used to be obeyed. Would you mind going?